like a new Lincoln with all of its class. I like a martini and bird on the glass. I'm gonna start living, you wait and see. Nothing but the best is good enough for me.
All right, welcome to another episode of Frankly Drinking. I am your host, Lawrence.
And I'm Luke. And you're listening to Frankly Drinking.
That's right. The podcast that gives you three songs, two drinks, all within one show. Is that right?
Right. Three, two, one.
Three, two, one.
Three songs, two pours, one amazing show. And you're listening to it. Yeah. So thank you for tuning in today.
Absolutely. We haven't done this in a while. It's been a little bit of time since we...
There has been a lull.
Yeah.
There's been a small lull here.
That's how it is in the podcast production. You do a few episodes. You take a few weeks off.
Yeah.
You know, we're not like, you know, doing this every day. This is not like a radio show. It's not the radio. A lot of people are confused about what a podcast is.
Really?
Well, you know, you talk to your parents. They don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you talk to people who don't listen. They're like, do you have to do that every day?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, no.
We have to get up every day and do this show. In our bathrobes.
From 8 o'clock.
We just get going there.
8 to 5 every day. Well, it has been a little bit of time since we did the last episode, but that's also the theme of tonight's episode, is it not?
That is right. Yes. Yes. We're talking, well, we've got some songs that touch on the theme of time and are tied together by that. And I think it's going to make for a great show.
Yeah.
So
I think it's very appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as you sent me that idea, I was kind of like, oh, well, this is easy. You made my job easy as the guy that knows a little bit about whiskey.
Right.
You would not have whiskey if it weren't for time. Time is more than 50% of the process, the genetic makeup of whiskey.
Yes. Yeah.
In a bottle.
You got to have time.
You got to have time.
You got to have time.
You age a distilled spirit for only 6 months? No. Mm. You're not going to drink that. That's just moonshine. And then you got to flavor moonshine with, you know, apple or blueberry or cherry.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
No.
No. Which is what they did for a while before they discovered, you know, that you could actually age it.
Right. And aren't we glad that someone back there figured out aging in barrels? And
wouldn't you like to have been, though, like there's a part of me that's like, wouldn't it have been interesting to, you know, did they just go like, you know, after, you know, 3 weeks? Oh, no. That's not it. Were they just tasting, you know, every so often like, no, that's not it. Should we wait a year? Should we? What if we waited like 3? Should we wait 4? I mean, they actually put standards in. That's part of the Bottle and Bond Act.
Right.
They put standards in to keep people from aging spirits and selling them at age, you know.
Oh, yeah.
2 months.
Pulling them out early and putting some coloring in there and stuff. And,
right.
Yeah,
sugars.
Trying to pass it off as aged spirits. Fortunately, we don't have to worry about that today. We just
there are some
to your store, and
there are some though that you know, that are definitely younger than 2 years.
Oh well,
yeah.
Some whiskeys.
Yeah, you can. Okay. You can buy stuff right now. There's a lot of craft distilleries that are making things that are 48 months or 2 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they have to tell you that, or just buyer beware?
If a bottle says straight bourbon on it, that means that it is older than, 4 years, basically.
4 years, yeah.
But there are some straight bourbons, there's some bourbons that are like 2 years old.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and it'll say on there, it'll say if they're, they don't have to tell you, but
okay.
If they're smart, they'll say age less than 2 years so that people know.
I'm not sure they we want should try you to
some.
Know that.
Yeah, we should try. We should have had some younger ones queued up here for the show. But anyway, instead, what I figured was that we would start with a great Frank Sinatra song, and then we'll talk about whiskey after that. So
sounds good.
What do we have first?
Yeah, this is the song that started this show in my head, and it's Just in Time. It was
that's an appropriate title.
Yes, Just in Time. It's from the 1959 Come Dance With Me album on Capitol, and it was arranged, the whole album was arranged by Billy May. And this was Frank Sinatra's most successful album.
Really?
Yes.
In 1959.
That's right.
It was his most successful record, even even after Come Swing With Me and Songs for Swingin' Lovers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was basically, this is the peak of his albums as far as popularity. It was on the Billboard chart for 2.5 years.
Wow.
You talk about things today coming and going in such a hurry, disposable media, and oh, that's the song for last week, or that's the movie that shows for what, a month now, and then it's totally out.
Unless it's Old Town Road by Little Nas X. That I keep, or Gangnam Style. It keeps going and going. There's always one that kind of rises above it.
Yeah, nah, sure. It's true. It's true. But this album had a tremendous staying power. It was very popular. Won 3 Grammys the next year. It won for Best Male Vocal. Can't argue with that.
Sure.
Album of the Year and Orchestration for Arrangement for Billy May. So this song, just to tell you a little bit more about it, was written by Jules Stein, lyrics by Betty Comden and Adolph Green. So it was released in 1959, recorded at the end of 1958. And it was from the musical Bells Are Ringing, 1956. Now, in 60, they made a musical film of the Bells Are Ringing, starring Dean Martin. And Dean Martin recorded this song, performed it in the film, along with Judy Holliday. And then Martin recorded it again for his seminal 1960 album, This Time I'm Swinging, with orchestration by Nelson Riddle. But let's... Oh, you got a question, Larry?
Yeah.
I think you have a question. Do you have a question?
Yes, yes. My hand is raised over here.
Ah.
So this was not recorded for a film that Frank starred in?
No. Oh. It was from a musical called Bells Are Ringing.
Right.
1956. Then they made a movie of the musical in 60,
okay.
Starring Dean Martin.
Okay. Right.
And so Martin performed it. I mean, everybody performed it. There's a lot of versions of this. But let's take a listen and we'll come back and chat about it a little bit more.
This is Just in Time off of Come Dance With Me.
Just in time, I found you just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed. My bridges all were crossed, nowhere to go. Now you're here, and now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I've found my way. For love came just in time. You found me just in time and changed my lonely life that lovely day.
Oh man, that's nice.
Yes. Wow.
Is that a lead off or is that early in the record?
It's the third track.
Oh, okay. I can see that.
Yeah. So this album is absolutely stacked with great songs, great arrangements by Billy May, and it's appropriate that it was so popular and sold so many albums, stayed on the Billboard chart for so long, because it's actually that good, and it's one great song after another, and the orchestrations by Billy May. Billy May was really popular. I mean, super swinging arrangements by Billy May on this LP.
Is this the first record that he arranged for Frank?
No, actually, he did a couple of tracks, some early tracks on Capitol with Sinatra. The thinking when Frank went to Capitol was that he would be doing a lot of work with Billy May, but Billy May was so in demand at the time that the partnership between Nelson Riddle and Frank Sinatra came along, and Nelson had done some work, sort of not exactly an understudy to Billy May, but he was sort of like the next guy in line, and Billy May was just so busy, it wound up that Riddle started working with Frank, and then the rest is history, because once those two guys clicked, they did album after album. Oh,
yeah. Well, that was a partnership.
Single after single. But Billy May did do some singles with Frank. He did some early. He did some at different times during the Capitol years. And then, interestingly, that was they worked together over a long period of time, even all the way up to the 1980 trilogy album. Billy May did one of those albums. It was a triple album.
Yeah.
Trilogy.
Oh, he did the full record?
And yes. So
the full platter.
Right. He did a full platter, exactly. Yeah. It was called Past, Present, and Future. And May did the past because he did all the great swinging arrangements of the classic songs that were on disc one of that set. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I need a drink.
Sounds good.
But you just give it a little more time. I've taken the liberty to pre-pour this bourbon because, like the theme of our show, it's very old.
Oh.
It's taken a lot of time in the barrel.
Okay.
So to correct ourselves, straight bourbon is a minimum of 2 years in charred oak barrels.
Okay.
It has to be straight. If it's less than four, it has to indicate that on the label. So if you see straight bourbon, that's what's going on. If it's Kentucky straight bourbon, all that holds true. Plus, there's extra rules around being from Kentucky, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But for this show, I picked something that's not 4 years old or less. This is 25 years old. So we're starting with something that you could enjoy after dinner.
Wow.
With a cigar, if you're into that, or just as a nice leisurely pour. This is a 25-year-old Rhetoric bourbon from Orphan Barrel. Orphan Barrel is basically a big marketing ploy from Diageo, but basically they find lost barrels of old spirit and bottle it up. So we're drinking a 25-year-old bourbon. It's not known where it's come from. There's speculation.
Well, we don't know where it came from, but we've got a pretty good idea of where it's going.
Yeah, that's right. It came from Kentucky. We know that. And it's going in our belly.
Exactly.
But basically, you know, old whiskeys are not, it's an acquired taste. I mean, basically, there's a sweet spot for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I figured this would be pretty special because of the time signature.
Yeah,
if you will, that's been imparted onto the spirit. But they started this a while ago in, like, I want to say 2013 or 14. They started releasing these and they started at age 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe they did one per year. It could have, there could have been a 19-year-old in there. I'm not sure. But anyway, I know there's a 20 through 25. And so the label gets darker with each release. So this 25-year-old is still around. You can still find it. And I...
Is this a pricey issue, Larry?
This is a pricey issue, yes. This will be a pricey one. But again, a special occasion bottle.
Right, right.
You know, okay. I mean, there's not many 25-year-old bourbons lying around.
No.
At this price point, it's actually pretty good.
Okay.
You can find this hovering around the $200 range, $220, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, as you see, I've only had a few sips off
a
of
few
it.
A few sips, yes. So, he's showing me the bottle on it. Appears to be about 90% full.
It's pretty much
92% full, somewhere around there. Mm.
You're going to get a lot more tannins from the wood on this. That's why I poured it in advance to let it open up.
Mm. You gave it some time.
I did
to open up.
I gave it some time to open up. But what's nice about this, and it's only. It's only 45.5 ABV, so it's 91 proof.
Mm-hmm.
So it's softer, and it doesn't have much of a bite. The oak is there, but it's not really... It's kind of dominant up front, but then it's got this nice vanilla kind of thing and softness that comes in, which is really great. I think it's something special. You know, this is something you're not going to drink every day.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Mm.
I think I detect notes of enjoyment out of Luke right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, that's very good. I like this. It's not an acquired taste for me. I'm ready to go.
It's, you know, a lot of people think that, I mean, definitely they have the right to think this, that
mm-hmm.
aging something that long is stupid and why would you ever do it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're interesting experiments. I mean, they yield really good results. If you have one that tastes like this, I don't know what this mash bill is, and I don't know who distilled this, but
mm-hmm.
It's kind of held up over time, and whoever proofed it down found the right level for the taste and the flavor. I think
mm-hmm.
if it was a higher proof, or if it was cask strength, it would probably be too dominant. With it would just be an oak bomb. You mm-hmm. know, it's kind of an oak bomb, but it's not like. It doesn't punch you in the face like like a log. I feel very much like I've cut down a tree, like a pine tree or an oak tree with a chainsaw, and I'm sitting around with all the chips of wood when I drink this.
Yeah, there is definitely, you can tell this is spent quite a bit of time in wood, so.
Yeah, there's a cognac type thing there too. If you don't drink cognac, that's one thing that when early distillers in the States were making bourbon,
mm-hmm.
they were trying to emulate cognac.
Right.
They were trying to kind of get that caramel and that, you know, that flavor that you get from cognac. Although cognac's made with grapes, you know, you get this, which is more oaky and more, you know, you can see where if they were drinking it right out of the barrel,
mm-hmm.
at, you know, 120, 128 proof, whatever they were proofing it at back then, or, you know, just happened to be tasting it at, you can see where they were getting that kind of cognac kind of thing if it aged for a long time.
Well, it's very good. Kudos to, is Orphan Barrel the brand or Rhetoric is the brand?
Orphan Barrel is the brand, but it's really Diageo.
Okay.
It's a manufactured label.
Okay.
Again, a lot of people buy their spirits. Non-distiller producers, NDPs, buy spirits from other companies and put their own label on it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, this is Diageo just buying barrels, not buying... it's kind of the same. They're, you know, they're buying the barrels of the spirit.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, quote-unquote found... or orphaned at different parts of the brick house. And so that's kind of the gimmicky kind of marketing overlay.
Right.
You know, there's a little funny thing going on with that label too, that every bottle, for the most part, the name of the label kind of speaks to the bourbon craze. For this one, it's called Rhetoric, which kind of, you know, holds true for the rhetoric around, you know, right, labels and what they're actually selling here.
Okay.
You've got like Old Blowhard, which is a 26-year-old bourbon. You got the Gifted Horse. You've got these labels that are named kind of like a wink to
the bourbon craze.
To the bourbon craze, maybe. I'm not sure exactly. Every one of them kind of has that little nod for whatever reason. So, but yeah, with that, I think we're going to take a break and come back and talk some more Frank. But why don't you introduce the next song?
Yeah, very good. So the next song that we want to share with you is Time After Time. And this was, again, written by Jewel Stein, this time with lyrics by Sammy Kahn, longtime Sinatra friend and collaborator. And this song actually was written for Frank, for the 1947 Frank movie, It Happened in Brooklyn. Frank performed alongside Jimmy Durante.
Did the movie happen in Brooklyn?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, it's hard to believe, given the name, It Happened in Brooklyn.
Just want to make sure it wasn't Peoria, Illinois.
It was not Queens.
Okay. Right.
It was Brooklyn. So, as I was saying, Jimmy Durante is in the film, Catherine Grayson, Peter Lawford, who would go on to be a friend of Frank's for a time during the Rat Pack days, future brother-in-law of Jack Kennedy. Mm-hmm.
Was that the first time they worked together?
I didn't look that up, but I think it's quite possible. Anyway, it's a cute film. I've seen it. I saw it last year. It Happened in Brooklyn. There's a lot of number of good songs that came out of it. The Brooklyn Bridge, which, you know, people are familiar with that song. You know, the good old Brooklyn Bridge. You know that song?
I don't.
Okay, well, it's a great song.
Okay.
And then there's another song that Frank does with Jimmy Durante in the film called The Song's Gotta Come From the Heart. And it's a duet with those two guys. So you've got Durante. With that, you know, famous, unique voice of his on that personality.
I do. Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
Let's sing a song together.
Yeah. So it's great. And it's a really fun part of the movie. But anyway, this song would later be recorded again by Frank, 1957, for Capitol with Nelson Riddle. But we're going to go back and we're going to get the one from Columbia from the time of the film in 1947. And we'll get to hear a little bit different sound to the voice. And we'll go to break and we'll come back.
All right. Well, with that, this is Time After Time, Frank Sinatra, the Columbia years.
What I know, the passing years will show. You have kept my love so young, so new.
It's the sensation that's sweeping the nation with two classics together at once, The Voice and The Hooch. It's Frankly Drinking, three songs, two pours, just like the chairman liked the nectar of the gods. Listen wherever you get today's newest radio broadcast digital creations, and remember to drink often and listen responsibly. The other way around, see? Drink responsibly and listen often.
So lucky to be loving you.
So nice. Welcome back, drinking time after time. I was thinking the Cyndi Lauper song would be a cover of that, but
no.
Oh, okay.
No, there's no.
Is it Lauper or Lauper? Cyndi Lauper.
I think Lauper, but I
was she on a duets album with him ever?
Ooh, I don't think so.
That would be a terrible. Maybe that was an SNL skit.
Yeah, that sounds more like it. I was gonna say earlier, this is not the Cyndi Lauper song, and we're not gonna cover Morris Day and the Time on this show either. Oh, right. You know, so we're just gonna talk about Frank. Bourbon and Time, including the song Time After Time, which you just heard. And the thing about it, to me, when you hear this recording, a beautiful song, wonderful arrangement that was done for it, and lyrics by Sammy Kahn, but you hear the voice. You hear the voice that Frank was known for in his early days. And it's so different than he really kind of has three voices, at least three voices. Probably, I mean, you could divide it up a lot more, you know.
With nuances and
stuff. You could parse it a lot more than that. But, you know, early days, Frank, which is what we heard, and you really kind of heard the purity, kind of an almost angelic quality.
You can see why the girls swooned.
Yes, the youthfulness.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was so skinny. He was going to blow away if the wind blew hard. So and he had floppy bow ties. You know, the girls were drawn to him with the romance and also sort of he seemed quite vulnerable, I think. With his waifish physique.
He still had a baby face.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean, he was in his 20s probably, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
When did he turn 30?
He would just have turned 30 in 1945. So this is the next year.
Okay. So yeah.
2 years later.
Right. So yeah, he's still super young.
He was very young. This was issued as a B-side to I Believe, which was also in this film. It happened in Brooklyn. And it went up to number 16 on the charts. So not a huge success on the Billboard charts, but what a wonderful performance by Frank. And it's different from the one on Capitol from 10 years later, which I think... is probably technically superior. And if you were just listening to Frank's voice, you'd probably say, well, 57, that version is better. But I like the nuance of this version. I like the way Frank performed it. And I just think it gives us a good snapshot of what his voice was like at that time.
Yeah, it's really good. I enjoyed that one. I also enjoyed all this 25-year-old spirit.
Yeah.
Again, don't put any water in this. If you have an old whiskey, don't put water in it. It kind of it doesn't really open up nicely. It's not like a scotch, like a 25-year-old scotch, which would cost you $1,200, $1,500 and up. You know, you're getting a cheaper bourbon here, but it's still 25 years old.
Yeah.
Don't ruin it with water.
Don't put any water.
No.
No water, no ice.
No water, no ice. If it's 18 years old and up, it just doesn't work to me.
Okay.
Unless it's a cask strength. But, you know, I don't know, experiment. But don't, if it's low proof, if it's under 100 proof, don't even put ice in it.
No, just take a quick glance. Savor. Over at the water and don't put in any.
Right, just make sure it's still there. Use it to cleanse your palate. So, obviously, once again, it's time for our second pour.
Mm.
And speaking of age, I chose a special bottle that came out in 2016. and that is the Jack Daniel's 150th anniversary bottle.
Something, you're kidding me.
Something that I haven't even tried before. Jack Daniel's celebrated their 150th anniversary in 2016, and they issued some standard bottles with the label that said 150.
Right, right.
But
this is actually 150-year-old Jack Daniel's.
No,
from,
no.
From right, no.
No, that would be a lot of money. I don't know what these retailed for, but basically they're a nice design. The barrels are slow charred, for whatever that means.
Okay.
It's a slow char process versus their normal char process.
Okay, okay.
And then they filled it with, they bottled it, I should say, at 100 proof. So okay. This is 100 proof spirit, and the charring process is different. Again, Jack Daniel's is only 4 years old.
Yeah.
So speaking of time
and
young bourbons, this is a young Tennessee whiskey at only about 4 years old, you know,
yeah.
Give or take. So we're going to open this guy up.
And it's a really nice looking bottle, by the way, Larry.
Yeah. Oh, that sounded good. Yeah, let me pass it to you there.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, it's again, I think there were a lot of exciting releases from Jack Daniel's from 2014, you know, through 2016 and 17. They released the Sinatra Select in like 2014,
mm-hmm.
I think, 2013-14, and then they released the Sinatra Century. And then they released this. This one, this is one of those ones that I kind of happened across. I just saw it on a shelf and didn't realize they were doing it. And I kind of wish that they had made more of it because it wasn't readily available. Mm. It was harder to track down. Mm-hmm. And they should have kind of made more so that more people could enjoy it. It definitely tastes different.
It does.
It's definitely, it's a soft 100 proof. It doesn't have any bite to it at all. Mm. It's almost like Gentleman Jack at 100 proof.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got this nice, soft banana and you know, classic Jack flavor right up front. And then it kind of tapers off. And the finish is not as lingering as you would think.
It's very good. The sweetness, it's got a really full sweetness to it. I mean, it's like you're eating candy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so... It's so sweet, very smooth.
Yeah.
Maybe it was helped by that slow charring. Slow charring made it.
Well, the slow charring smooth. Process of the Orphan Barrel, slow 25 years of slow mm-hmm. charring, you know, exposing itself to the charred barrel. This one is completely devoid of the age, but it has this oaky thing too. I mean, you can taste the char.
Oh yeah.
It just doesn't have, I don't know. It doesn't have the same kind of Jack Daniel's finish on it. There's just something about that second or third sip that kind of makes you go, this is something special.
It really is. It really is. It's different. Definitely a different flavor. And you're talking about always the same mash bill, the same this, the same that, the same water, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But there's something great and different about it.
Now, they could have placed this in a different part of the Rick House and then blended it with other barrels. I'm not sure, you know, it's not necessarily a single barrel product, but whoever, you know, blended this together, is it, I forget who their master distiller is now. I don't know who's doing the blending up there, but... You know, we'll get into that in another episode, but they did a good job.
Yes. Kudos.
I think it's very apt for an anniversary release, you know, for them to do a 150th anniversary bottle like this. They should do 155.
We'll be here.
Yeah.
We'll be here. Yeah.
I look forward to the 200th anniversary, which is coming up.
That's going to be it's going to be a long time from now, buddy.
Yeah. Just like 5 years.
And add a zero.
Okay, well, with that, that's about all the time we have for this episode.
Ooh, no. We have a little bit more time.
Oh, we have a little bit more time to introduce our Discover Frank track.
Yes.
which if you haven't heard this, it's wonderful. This is actually one of the albums I do know and love, because, again, a great album cover.
Yeah.
Another painting of the man.
Yes.
I'm not sure about who painted this, but he loved his art during this period of time. This is from Point of No Return.
Yeah, this is from Point of No Return. The song, we'll get to in a second, but Point of No Return, the album, 1962, Axel Stordahl arranged it for Frank. And unbelievably, Larry, this whole album was recorded in 2 days. Speaking of time, Frank was in a hurry. He had already launched Reprise Records. He'd had 3 albums out on Reprise already, but he was finishing up his contract terms with Capitol. And so he agreed to do this album, but he wanted it done in a hurry.
This is the last one?
Yes. The last full LP? This is the last, until, you know, years later when Duets and that happened, and he was back on Capitol. But this is the last Capitol album that Frank would record. Axel was not happy with his old friend sort of running through this in 2 days. But you know what? I really can't tell. I think particularly on this song, Frank sounds in very good voice, and the artistry, the feelings, everything is there. Frank didn't do any junk, even when he was in a hurry.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
This thing is, this is a great closer.
Yeah.
To, that period of time. This record is.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. And so the song that we're going to play is As Time Goes By. It was written in 1931. It was made famous, by Casablanca, with, Dooley Wilson performing it as Sam on the piano and singing it in the film. Funny thing I learned about this, Larry, Dooley Wilson could not record a commercial version of it in 1942 because there was a musician strike in 42, 43, 44. So a couple labels pulled out versions that had been recorded back when the song was originally written in 31, and one of those by Rudy Valli did pretty well. An 11-year-old song being released, a recording, rather. And let me just say that you'll notice at the beginning of this track, the piano is there, echoing the piano from Casablanca. Oh. And then it completely disappears. It goes into the orchestration, an orchestral orchestration.
Oh, so was that on purpose?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Because there had not been a recording of this.
Oh, well, so you see, this is being done.
Or this is just a nod to
1962.
Yeah.
Just a nod to the performance by Dooley Wilson in the film that made this song famous.
Gotcha. So
I just thought that was cool. And Axel Stordahl did that arrangement and did a nice job. And you'll hear Frank. Always in good voice and a very nice performance.
Perfect. Well, great. We're going to cue this up. Remember, listeners, to find us on Instagram at Frankly Drinking. Wherever you get your podcasts from, you can download that, tell people about it. This has been another great episode of Frankly Drinking.
You must remember.
I'm going to enjoy the rest of this, Jack, while we listen to this. I am Lawrence.
And I'm Luke, and you've been listening to Frankly Drinking.
The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when 2 lovers woo, they still say, I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by.